This girl was now worthy of him, and it infuriated me to imagine them together, that he would be with her and forget me. I should have felt nothing but gratitude toward the young woman. Kyer was awake now. That had seemed almost impossible, but we had exhausted our other options. We had tried and failed several times to send various descendants to this world, returning after each attempt to the floating islands to find another limb of either family tree that we could manipulate. I began to juggle dozens of men and women at once. Soon I had laid out hundreds of different plans, hoping and watching to see if any would work. Finally, Gilluard was born. Perhaps there was something wrong with him that allowed me to speak to him directly. Perhaps it was a gift from the dead gods. Or a curse. Whatever the reasons, Moloch's descendant listened to me both in his dreams and while awake. He was handsome, strong, and born into a family that ranked highly within his clan's political structure. He was the perfect tool. And as soon as I discovered him, I began to plot ways to get him to this world to bring back Kyer. My plan shifted when he met Talaxthi. I sensed their initial attraction to each other immediately. Under normal circumstances, neither of them would have ever imagined forming a relationship with each other. But my voice whispered in their ears, coaxing and persuading them, making them think my desires were their own. And Tuss and I were intrigued with the possibility of the two of them creating a child. We knew it was possible, as Kyer and I had created Vyarathi. But we had never heard of another like her in the thousands of years we had spent observing their world. Entus believed a crossbreed could utilize the O'Barney's powerful magic and use the radicals without an ovule. The orbs were difficult to obtain, and I did not know how many, if any, existed on the world where my daughter waited. My plan worked perfectly. Almost too perfectly. Their offspring was discovered by one of the nobles of this world and adopted as his own. His home was close to the radical Vyarathi would come through, and all I needed to do was instruct the girl to awaken Kyer, tell him my daughter's name, and then my love could finally save our daughter. Except the bitch was too fucking strong. Or stupid. Probably the latter. I pleaded with her. I asked her hundreds of times to find Kyer, or to find Vyarathi so that the girl could wake her father. Nadia did not listen. She woke from her dreams and recalled nothing of what I said. The situation was beyond frustrating. I had laid all my hopes upon this girl, and for many years it seemed as if she would fail, though all of the other pieces were finally in place. Entus could do little to help. Finally, I discovered a method that made my words stick in her brain when she awoke. Nadia was not responsive to my gentle pleas for help, but she was terrified of me when I screamed at her. The fear seemed to bind most of my messages, and when the girl woke crying from her nightmare of me, she would quickly jot down what she remembered in her journal. She got most of it wrong, but for every step backward I made two steps toward educating the girl, and she slowly became obsessed with discovering Kyer. I was the terrible single-born again, and I hated it. I just worry about Jesme making that climb. Nadia's voice interrupted my thoughts. They were looking from the edge of the cliff at the human soldiers at the base of the canyon. Kyer could have destroyed them with a wave of his hand and a shred of his magic. But he did not remember how to use his power, nor the extent of it.
"It will be okay," he assured her.
"Good idea. Let's go back." Nadia smiled at him, and I felt my stomach flip with anger.
"I'm sure he'll remember soon. He has not forgotten how to fight, and made quick work of those humans that captured his new friends. When it matters, he will use his power."
And Tuss reassured me again, and I nodded to him. I knew the old man was trying to make me feel better. Perhaps he was even experiencing the same frustration as I was. But at the moment, I did not want any words of encouragement. I just wanted my daughter to meet her father. Kyer and Nadia walked back to the area where they ascended the cliff to reach this high jungle. Entus and I followed, but did not speak to each other. The sun was close to setting, but I knew that Kyer would be able to see in the darkness.
"We should climb up tonight," he said to Nadia.
She nodded, but instead of speaking, the girls set about anchoring their climbing rope to the rocky ledge of the cliff and tying the loose end of the length to a tree nearby. "Tell him!" I stood in front of her when she tied the rope around the tree, but of course she didn't hear me.
"You should yell louder," Entus chuckled. "I think your dead gods almost heard you that time."
"Fuck you, Entus."
Don't get mad at me.
The weird monkey man shrugged his shoulders.
I've done nothing but help you. Don't forget that I also want your daughter saved from the radical.
He's attracted to her, I admitted. It angers me. I apologize.
She's attracted to him as well. What can you do? They will probably fuck each other as soon as they get back to the pretty blonde girl's castle.
Now you are just trying to enrage me, I growled. Try. Nadia handed Kair the rope, and he gave it a few tugs to ensure that the tree would hold his weight. Then he slid off the edge of the cliff and began his descent. The woman followed a few seconds after him.
What are you willing to sacrifice for your daughter? Maybe if they are lovers, it will be easier for her to remember your instructions.
That sounds unlikely. Stop talking about it, I seethed.
You are not alive anymore. If you want Vyarathi to survive the radical, you'll have to stay here and observe his new life. He will love again.
No, he loves me. He doesn't care about that girl, and neither do I. I wanted to smack him, but I knew it was pointless. The man was slippery, and though he was more than annoying, I had come to rely on his help.
Oh, you don't care about Nadia, after you spent thousands of years creating her. I find that hard to believe.
He raised a gray, bushy eyebrow and chuckled. No, I do not care about her. I spent too much time on the bitch. I was about to say more, but Entas did a strange bird-like hop toward the rope and pulled a sword out of the air as if he had an invisible sheath hanging above him. Then he brought the weapon down on the rope. It cut cleanly, as if the blade was real, and Entas's arm had actually delivered the blow. No! I dove toward the rope as it slithered over the edge. I felt the smooth hem slide through my palm before I could close my fingers. My entire body began to ache at the loss, and I screamed again. All was lost! I crawled to the side of the cliff and imagined the horrific scene that awaited me. Kair might survive, but the girl would be dashed against the rocks below like a drop of splattered red paint. Without her, Kair would not know what to do. He did not even know who he was. He needed her to guide him to our daughter. Once I peered over the edge, I sighed with relief. My love had grabbed onto the side of the cliff and also caught the girl. I watched him swing her onto the cliff face, and then he looked up to see what had caused the line to separate from the tree. Why? I shouted my question to Entas.
Did you feel the rope?
He smiled.
Yes.
I looked down at my hand and saw a bit of red where the cord briefly slid against my skin. How did I touch it? How did you get that sword?
I think that you care about that girl more than you will admit. She is very similar to your daughter, don't you think?
No, she is nothing like my daughter. Explain to me what just happened.
It is odd that you feel that way. Both Nadia and Vyarathi have mixed lineage. They both enjoy traveling, climbing, and exploring. They both have inquisitive minds and are much smarter than the average human or elven.
Are you going to tell me about the sword and the rope? I thought we were past these games. I felt my anger subsiding. If I really could touch items in the physical world, I might have a better chance of communicating with Kair. Then I would not need Nadia.
You can create or touch anything that you want.
What? I rose to my feet and felt like murdering the man. Why did you keep this from me? That would have made my quest much easier.
That is doubtful. And I did tell you, you just don't remember.
I've recalled all of our conversations. I spat at the little bald man.
Of course you have.
He nodded and winked at me.
It is a difficult power to harness. You must really want the object to appear or move. It won't just happen. It is difficult to master, and it will leave you feeling weak. It is not something you can do often.
You don't look tired.
I know who I am. You are still confused.
More riddles. I know who I am, Entas.
Your apprentice is leaving. Do you wish to follow her?
He pointed at the edge of the cliff and smirked. Show me how you made that sword, then show me how you cut the rope. I would not let him distract me.
You won't forget this time?
He bobbed his head in the usual fashion.
No,
you have not shown me before. I was calm now and ready to learn. I would forgive him again because this existence was more than lonely. He was all I had, and I needed him as much as he infuriated me.
See that stone?
He gestured to the palm-sized rock that lay next to my foot. I nodded.
Pick it up from the ground.
It will spin around my hand. See? I knelt down and ran my hand through the stone. It swirled around my palm and fingers like it was made of oil.
I want you to think about picking up the stone and throwing it at me.
His face dropped the smirk, and I followed his instructions. For a moment, it seemed as if the rock became solid in my hand, but then it slipped from my grasp like steam.
You actually need to throw it at me. First think it, then do it. You only half consider throwing it at me.
He smiled again.
It is nice to know that, despite your words, you don't actually want to hurt me.
I smirked and reached for it again. The rock seemed to solidify in my hand, and I shot to my feet with a twist of my hips. My arm whipped out, and the stone hurled through the air on an arrow's path to the old man's chest. His hand blurred at the last second, and he caught the rock with a loud slapping sound. It felt as if I had been punched in my stomach, kidneys, face, breasts, and groin at the same time. I felt my knees hit the rocky top of the cliff first, and then the rest of my body crumpled afterward. My lungs did not want to inhale, and I could not move. I had almost forgotten physical pain. It had been eternities since I had felt anything this excruciating.
"What is this?" I gasped after a few seconds of agony. "It's the pain of doing something that is impossible for a mortal," he replied.
I realized that the pain felt the same as when I briefly touched the rope, but this was much greater and was lasting longer.
"Do you feel like this every time you move objects?"
The agony was subsiding, and I was able to stand again. The sun was setting, and it seemed as if I had lost more than a few minutes to the pain.
"Maybe,"
he shrugged his shoulders. "What if I practice? Will it become easier and less painful?"
"I doubt it, but feel free to try."
I looked at another rock on the ground and debated hurling it at the man again. But then the thought of the dreadful pain intimidated me too much, and I decided to practice later tonight when Kair was sleeping. I needed to observe him and Nadia. I thought about them, and the world blurred.
"We need to leave as soon as possible."
Nadia was breathing heavily from her run through the jungle, and Kair was unpacking one of their horses. There were four other people in their group, the chieftain's small blonde daughter, the large and muscular human with long gray hair who served as her protector, a tall man who stunk of the O'Barney power but told them all he was a guide, and the young human male with mousy brown hair and a timid disposition. They all began to speak at once and asked Nadia idiotic questions. "How do I get her to tell him?" I asked Entus over the din of human drivel.
"You could not communicate Barathi's name before, and I had no ideas for you then, either. Perhaps if you help her, she will help you with Kair."
"What do you mean?" I screamed with impatience.
"Everyone wants something. Our subconscious seeks out our desires while we sleep. Guide her to what she wants in her dreams. She will come to trust you."
"But she already did what I wanted, to wake Kair. She just needs to tell him my daughter's name and lead him to the radical."
"Was that what she wanted? You wanted Kair awake. She does not care about Vairathi."
He turned to the small campfire and the orange flames reflected in his silver eyes.
"Maybe there is something else she wants."
I followed his gaze and saw Nadia studying Kair while he put a pack on the back of the boy.
"You wanted to wake Kair, but it appears that she wants something else from him."
"I won't help her with that," I spat the words.
"You are wise, Ailrathi, and you have been observing humans and elves for countless years. You may not want to admit it, but you understand their emotions. You will figure out a way to get through to her."
"I don't have years to test different tactics. My daughter needs to be freed now."
"Then maybe you should begin testing my idea as soon as you can."
He smiled at me, and I sighed. The jungle smelled of human fear and fresh rain.
"You are right, Entus."
I hated to say those words, but I knew they were true. "I've waited this long. I can be patient."
"See, you are growing wiser every day."
I looked at the woman's back and wished I could smack her on the head and scream at her until she gave Kyaer the name. Believe me, I, among all beings, can understand how frustrating this is. The old man began to laugh, and it evolved into a gut-wrenching cackle. I looked at him and saw Entus rolling on the jungle floor. His bamboo cane leaned against a thick tree, and his hands clutched his sides as if he was trying to hold his stomach inside of his skin. I turned to follow Kyaer's human escorts to the base of the cliff, and then I followed their climb to the top. It seemed as if Entus was still laughing when I arrived where he had cut the rope. But I was the only one that could hear him.
Chapter 46 Kyaer. The air was chilly, and my breath came out in a warm fog that twisted before my eyes like a dancer. It was the soft part of the dawn, just before the sun would rise, when life was at its stillest point. The dark lake over which the radical stood was a silent mirror, reflecting the stars of the sky like the scales of the dragons I once battled. Our campsite lay 2 hours away by foot. Our band of rescuers, along with 100 of the Empress's green-armored guards, waited there. I could not sleep with the thought of my daughter so close, so I'd left a note for Jesme and sneaked out of the tent in the middle of the night. The elven sentries saw me leave, but I informed them I would be at the radical. They let me go. They knew they could not stop me. I walked toward the entrance of the radical and considered the path that had led me to this point in my life. Not the narrow path we'd taken through the Teeth Mountains, but the events of my life that had brought me here. It all began when I met Io Larothi. We had changed the world and brought forth a new one. Thousands of years had passed. Thousands of people had died. Everything had led me here, to this mystical shrine that would bring our child into this world. I was fortunate to survive. Io Larothi had died. Entus had died. My family had died. My generals were nothing but legend and history, but I was alive. My daughter was alive. If these dead gods the elvens believed in were real, I wondered if they weighed the horrors I had inflicted upon these worlds with the good I had done. It was not fair that I lived while my people did not. I hoped Malak had finally found a love to rival what he had felt for Shlara, a love that could be returned in equal measure. I hoped Alexia found peace within herself and someone she could trust enough to share her heart with. I hoped Gorbani got to spend his days breeding horses and teaching others to ride. I laughed, because when I thought of Thayer, I knew all he wanted was to be free from the elvens and fuck a bunch of women. I was sure he had achieved both goals. Shlara. I did not recall ever seeing her after Io Larothi's execution. Maybe she had perished in the fire that destroyed her city. Maybe she survived, and the destruction I had wrought only fueled and furthered her hatred of me. If I could have taken back any of the horrible things I had done, it would be that moment when I burned her. Though now I knew that would have left Io Larothi dead at Shlara's hand. I would never be able to forgive myself for what I did to her, but I accepted that it had happened, and I understood why I had chosen Io Larothi over Shlara. Since I could not forgive myself, I would focus on atonement. I would live a life that would make Shlara proud and grateful I had survived. Via Rothi needed my love. I did not know what her personality was like, or what she would expect from me as a father, but I knew that she was made from the woman I loved. I already knew I loved her beyond any other person I had ever known. Jesme also needed my love and support while she navigated through her new role as the ruler of this country. The Empress had not been pleased to find out that I was back on this world, and the brief conversation between Nadia, Jesme, Talaxthi, and I indicated that she would attempt to stop me from gathering any of the political power Jesme could bestow. Her subtle threats were coming from a place of fear, and I knew that I would be able to win her trust after a few years of treating her fairly. And for the time being, she was beholden to Jesme, and I knew Talaxthi would do nothing drastic that might anger the powerful queen. Alatoric and I had met briefly before I departed on this journey, and we spoke at great length about Islata. The conversation had been difficult due to the complexities of each of our relationships with the Singleborn. He was the father of the children she carried. I sighed and turned my thoughts away from the elven general. He promised to speak with me again when I returned with my own daughter, and I knew that I would have to beg the man to forgive me. Though I had killed Islata in self-defense, it didn't make our conversation any easier, and I still felt a tremendous amount of remorse over the death of my former lover. This radical was similar to the others I had seen, a gray-green tower that spiraled toward the sky. This shrine had half a dozen stone beds lining the first level. A staircase led up to the room where the ovule would be placed on the control dais. I carried the leather bag that held the ovule, but Nadia told me she could complete the ritual without it. As anxious as I was to bring my daughter forth, I knew it was better not to waste the powers of the ovule, so I waited for Nadia to arrive. I had waited for Via Rothi for thousands of years. A few more hours should not make a difference. I sat down on the tile before one of the benches and let my eyes fill with the darkness of the place. For a few minutes there was no sound, sensation, or scent. I forced my mind to think of nothing other than what it would be like to meet my daughter. Dawn couldn't come quickly enough. I heard a noise outside of the structure. Footsteps sounded in the forest. I opened my eyes. The first rays of dawn filled the floor of the radical. I knew the footsteps and the cadence of her heart. I would always remember the sound of her heart. Nadia, I greeted her when she stepped into the doorway of the shrine. Good morning, Kaer. She smiled at me, and my heart skipped. I couldn't sleep, and the elvens mentioned you had left camp an hour ago. I figured you would be here. I rose and tried to keep my excitement under control. It would not be long now before I met Via Rothi. Emotions are funny. My father knew I loved him. He loved me. But he couldn't bear to show me this place. He was afraid that I would figure out how to use it and then leave him. He knew where it was all along? I asked. Yes. When I told him of your daughter, he confessed. Her smile faded a bit, and she sighed lightly. What did you say after he told you? Everyone deserves forgiveness. Everyone deserves love. She smiled again. Even me? Especially you, Kaer. She laughed. Then why don't you believe that you deserve love? I asked her. She crossed her arms and looked away. I stepped toward her and reached my hand out to touch her shoulder. Then I pulled her into my arms. Her body shook against me, and my nose filled with the scent of her hair and the sound of her heart hammering wildly. I could almost taste her skin on my tongue, and her arms gently wrapped around my waist. She leaned her head into my chest and let out a deep sigh. Do you know how I feel about you? I whispered. Yes, but... No, I interrupted her. You know that I love you. You also love Jesme. You love both of us. Her slender body leaned into me for another precious second, and then she pushed herself away. It is better that you are with her. She needs you. Do you love me? I held her shoulder again. No, she averted her eyes. Look at me, I begged. Tell me you do not love me. If you really don't, then I will join with Jesme in marriage. And if I tell you that I do love you, Nadia's eyes were suddenly fierce, then you know what I will decide. I don't love you, Kaer. I only want your friendship and the love of your daughter. She smiled and blinked a few times. Will you give me your friendship? Will you allow me to return that bond? Will you let me befriend your daughter and treat her as my niece? Yes, of course. I forced a smile to my lips and let my breath leave my body slowly. Should I bring her through? Nadia asked. Can you bring her here now? I said, after we looked at each other for a few more seconds. Don't you need Jesme? She suspected you would leave and come here. She told me she is close enough to sense when I use the radical, and she will release the hold then. Do you want to wait for her? No. Jess will understand. If you are here and can do it now, I don't want to wait any longer. My heart began to race, and I felt the palms of my hands get sweaty. I was more nervous than I could ever recall feeling. Perhaps I had felt this way when I first met Iola Rothi, and she asked me to wash her feet. But that was many lifetimes ago. Then let's meet your daughter. Nadia walked to the nearest pedestal and laid her hands upon the smooth stone. I felt the earth surge up around me with familiar warmth, and the walls of the radical seemed to glow with a symphonic range of gold colors. Via Rothi, Nadia said clearly, and the world echoed her name. Then my daughter came to this world and into my arms.
Epilogue. I watched Kaer embrace our child, and my heart soared. Finally, I spoke the words, but they sounded strange. The language seemed cumbersome and inadequate. You brought her to this world, Entas said, and I turned to look at the man. He was different. I was different. It was a sudden change. The knowledge of who I really was crashed into me and scattered into a million particles of nothing. I knew too much. I understood everything that was now and that had been. I saw my daughter and my love again and understood who they were. I turned to the being that called himself Entas and knew who he was. It was horrifying and wonderful at the same moment. I am sorry, my child. I apologized because it was needed. I hated admitting I was wrong, much like Iola Rothi. But I had made too many mistakes to maintain such pride. I know. His form nodded, but I saw the life behind the mask of skin and bone. How many lives have you lived? I knew the answer before I asked. Hundreds of thousands. The forum flickered with a smile and a bright orange color. How many times did you try to tell us? I gave up and stopped trying. Neither of you would remember. Every instance was met with rejection. It was the punishment you gave yourselves. Then Kaer came to be, and I recognized the opportunity. He does not know. He knows at the same time that he does not. It is why he kept returning. I watched them embrace again. My child was telling Kaer that she knew he would find her. She was painfully thin, but her small arm had enough strength to reach up and touch his face. The adoration was plain in her eyes, and I felt my consciousness fill with love. It was wonderful.
your avatar, the voice of my other child said. I saw that Nadia had left the radical and walked in the direction that would return her to the camp. My family was distracted by their first meeting and had not noticed that Nadia no longer stood beside them. The woman continued to walk into the nearby forest, and I wondered why she did not remain to rejoice with her friend. She crouched down beside a fallen pine log and put her face in her hands. Then she wept. They were ravaging sobs of pain and loss. I felt my own sadness force tears to the eyes of the elven shape I currently wore. I knew her pain. This is what we needed to understand. My child nodded, and empathy filled his silver eyes. We knew nothing of sacrifice or love or regret, I said. Now we understand. We know what it is to be mortal. His words floated to me. I will never be able to repay the debt I owe her. Nadia cried for 10 more minutes. She forced herself to stop and wiped her eyes on her sleeve and rose, trembling, to her feet. She walked back toward the radical. She may continue to serve you. There is still terrible danger to our family, our children, and their worlds. I nodded and forced my form's eyes closed. Rikatalosti Katri. The dragon lived. Though she no longer submitted to our will, she had her own dark desires now. The monster I created needed my daughter so that she could travel through the radicals. She knows Kair's armor is gone and that he has finally woken. She knows that he will release Vyarathi from her prison. Her minions will not stop until they return to her what you have promised. I know. What shall we do? He asked. Now that I was aware of the truth, he reverted to his old role of seeking my guidance. Kair held my daughter in his arms, and they walked out of the radical. Nadia met them a few steps in front of the clear pond, and Kair introduced his daughter to the woman. Nadia's eyes were still red from crying, but Kair did not notice. He was too wrapped up with the thin girl he carried. She will have to learn of her powers. She will have to fight. She will have to save them. She will have to save us all. Then we will pray that she is successful. I smiled at the irony and watched the trio journey into the forest and up the path that would eventually return them to their other friends. The sun had almost completed its initial climb into the sky, and I marveled at the beauty of the forsaken world. The scene was a fitting end to my existence. And now that Vyarathi was alive, I could do nothing more than watch her fate unfold. Then we will pray that she is successful. I repeated his words. This concludes The Destroyer, Book 4, by Michael Scott Earle. Narrated by Kevin T. Collins and Exie Sands. Copyright 2016 by Michael Scott Earle. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Michael Scott Earle and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.